Welcome to this week's colloquium. Today we're pleased to have Zheng Shenggu. He got his PhD from Tsinghua University in Beijing, did postdocs at MIT, KITP, and Caltech, and is currently a director's fellow here at PI. Today he's going to tell us about symmetry-protected topological phases.
Thanks for the introduction. Good afternoon. So today I would like to talk about a new class of topological phases, namely the so-called symmetry-protected topological phases, and describe some scheme for how to classify and what's the physical picture of this kind of so-called symmetry-protected topological phases. And actually, this is still some ongoing work. So basically, during the last 3 years, so I would like to report some results in this talk. I would like to thank my collaborators, Professor Xiaogang Wen at MIT and here, and Professor Mike Levin from Chicago, and Dr. Xie Chen, Dr. Zhen Xin Liu, and Dr. Meng Chen, Dr. Peng Ye, who is a postdoc here. So let me start from the simple question, why we need a classification? Because sometimes I talk to experiment people, and they just ask me question, why we need this kind of classification? Looks like it has nothing to do with experiment. But the reason actually is simple, because when chemistry people discover this periodic table, they know what's the fundamental block of these elements, and actually it's useful for long term for experiment. So actually we want to ask the question, like how to understand the different quantum phases in many body systems in a systematic way, because experimentally people just discover some example, but theoretically we want to have a systematic understanding. And actually there are examples for very good systematic understanding historically. For example, the kind of paradigm proposed by Landau. So basically Landau first proposed this phenomena, like ice and water, they just related by different symmetry. And he used a very simple quantity, so-called order parameter, to describe this kind of phase transitions. And his scenario turns out to be extremely powerful, even applied for quantum system, like this magnets. And actually, nowadays, this all computers, the disk kind of made by such kind of magnets. And also more fancy application is this superconductor in the fast trains. And this kind of systematic understanding turns out to be mathematically can be related to some deep framework, so-called group theory, which is can be applied to even high energy physics, for example, for the Higgs mechanism. So this kind of systematic understanding is really useful and might have deep application to many different fields. So today I would like to talk about a new classes of quantum matter. Basically, people call it topological phases, and because it's kind of not described by Landau, so we call it beyond Landau paradigm. But first I would like to have a definition. What are topological phases of quantum matter? So in a simple word, it's really simple. Just a gapped quantum phase, and without any symmetry breaking and long range correlation. So locally, it just looks like a trivial disorder phase. So here, trivial disorder phase, I just mean a product state or atomic insulate. So it's really trivial. But the claim is that without the phase transition, there's no adiabatic path. You cannot connect it to a trivial disorder phase, although locally, it looks like a disorder phase. So I will tell you some break of kind of global feature that can identify these topological phases later. But as a definition, it's just like this. Locally, it looks like very trivial, but globally, it's non-trivial. Okay. So but when we think about adiabatic evolution, it's reasonable to think about two different basic cases, because typically, this system will have some additional global symmetry. So we call one case, we call it intrinsic topological order. That means we allow arbitrary adiabatic paths, even break all the symmetry. With no symmetry at all, we can still ask how many different phases we have. And such kind of topological phases, sometimes we call it to have long-range entanglement. There's no adiabatic path connected to a trivial product state. And another one, I want to talk about today, is relatively simple. In a sense that only non-trivial, if we consider this adiabatic path preserved symmetry. If we break the symmetry, it turns out to be completely trivial. Just means if we think about the adiabatic path with no symmetry at all, we can just connect it to a trivial disorder phase. Yeah, so that's the definition. Okay, so let me give you some example about topological phases have been discovered in experiments. So the first and the most novel example have been discovered like for 3 decades, and namely this fractional quantum Hall state. And classically, people may all understand what is the Hall effect, just because of the Lorentz force. When you have this magnetic field along Z direction, and you have current, then there's a transverse voltage, and you can define this so-called Hall resistance, which basically the transverse voltage over this current. Okay, so classically, just the kind of linear curve, it's proportional to the magnetic field, because with stronger magnetic field, you have stronger Lorentz force. But quantum, it's very surprising. People find a lot of kind of platitudes, which is very strange. But not so strange, because quantum sometimes means we have kind of discrete values. But when we take a close look about this discrete value, some of this discrete value corresponding to so-called integer filling, like the number here. It's like 2, 3, 4, it's integer filling. So for this integer filling, you can just apply quantum mechanics for a single particle problem with Landau level. So you get a couple of kind of discrete spectrums. We call the first Landau level, second Landau level, third Landau level. And when this electron fill up this Landau level, we will see some plateau. But the big mystery is that why they also appear at this so-called fractional filling. There's no simple reason why they exist, because the free fermion does not predict such kind of phase. So I will explain this kind of mechanism in the next slide. So let me discuss another example that has been potentially discovered by experiment recently, so-called some Heisenberg model, anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg model with J larger than zero on this so-called Kagome lattice. So it's a specific lattice with some corner sharing kind of pattern. And on this lattice, classically, you can just very easy to think about this lattice. Why it can be non-trivial? Because it's very hard to make anti-ferromagnetic ordering. So if we put this up, this down, and you don't know the third one should be up or down. And people doing some very sophisticated numerical calculation and predict there's a potential gap in spin liquid. And recently, there's a preparation of a single crystal for such kind of material. And in principle, experiment can verify such kind of prediction on this material. Okay, so let me give you some intuition about why this so-called topological phases can happen in correlated system. So this is some simple argument by Laughlin. He gave the simplest example for this one-third filling. So the one-third filling, the plateau we see here. This is the dominant, the biggest plateau. And for this one-third filling, Laughlin just write down a very simple wave function. It has an analytical form. And this Z just means the coordinate on the complex plane, just like X, Y coordinate. But this kind of Laughlin wave function describes some very nice and simple physics. So the underlying physics just following, when you have a constant magnetic field, this electron just do cyclotron motion. And this cyclotron motion, there are a lot of scattering in the presence of strong Coulomb interaction. And the way the electron want to cool down and low energy is that effectively can think about for this one-third filling system, each electron will associate with like 3 magnetic flux. So it's just kind of attached with 3 flux. With this attachment, it become a boson. And this boson, in condensed matter, we know at low energy can just be a boson condensate. So it's kind of this condensate of this composite object describe this non-trivial kind of fractional quantum Hall effect. And we also have a very good quantum field theory approach. after Witten's seminal work on this so-called chain Simons theory. And it describes such kind of charge flux attachment. And most non-trivially, with such kind of attachment, because the Offerholm Bohm phase between this charge and flux, it's not surprising that the fundamental excitation actually will carry fractional statistics. For example, this in this roughly one-third state, the statistics just be like one-third of a fermion. It's kind of some fractionalized particle. And more systematically, such kind of topological phases, we can use some basic data to describe it. So the first thing we call the T matrix. So T matrix just ask the following question: when this quasi-particle in the, like, for example, fraction quantum Hall system, it's rotated by 2 pi, what's the phase pickup? So for a fermion, we know it's minus 1. For boson, we know it's 1. But for anion, it can be, basically, can be fractionalized value. And also, there's another quantity called this mutual statistics. Just means assume we have 2 types of anion. In a Laughlin, this singular Laughlin case, we only have 1. So this kind of things is trivial. But in like a double layer or more complicated system, in principle, you can have multiple species of anion. And when you breed them, you have one anion go around the other. You can ask what's the phase. And this kind of two data, together with something we call this chiral central charge, because this freshman quantum Hall state also have some this chiral edge mode and described by a central charge. And these 3 data can completely determine a topological phase without any symmetry protection. So it's called, mathematically, sometimes called a unitary modular tensor category theory, can completely describe such kind of data. But on the other hand, in a real experimental system, of course, we don't only have a topological effect for a fraction quantum Hall. And you can think about that there's other kind of geometry fluctuation, which is beyond this data. But as a fixed point and as a classification, it's sufficient just to use such kind of data to identify different fraction quantum Hall states. Or sometimes we call this data description for the fixed point state in the sense of randomization group flow. Okay, so this is some simple understanding for what we have already observed experiment 3 decades ago. But in recent years, it turns out there are some other kind of interesting topological phenomena that has been first described in a free fermion system, namely this so-called topological insulate. So this kind of topological phases, in some sense, it's less interesting because the bulk excitation just completely trivial. There's no fancy kind of fractionalized quasi-particle because it's just a free fermion, free electron system. But it's still non-trivial in the sense that when we impose some global symmetry for such kind of system, for example, for the topological insulate, the global symmetry is just a time reversal and a charge conservation. And then it turns out we can have some different types of insulate. A trivial insulator and a so-called non-trivial topological insulator in both 2D and 3D. So it can be kind of characterized by this non-trivial gapless edge mode on the boundary. So in a simple word, if we have a non-trivial topological insulator, we will have like all the number of Dirac cones on the boundary, which cannot be realized in any purely, for example, like a 1D or 2D system without boundary. So on the other hand, you can just use this perturbative kind of argument to show it's stable against the perturbation that preserve time reversal, just because edge mode, they form this Kramer doublets. And also, very fast, people realized that there's a systematic way to classify kind of such kind of symmetry protected topological phases in free Fermat system, namely this K-theory. To this end, we try to understand more because here it's basically free Fermat system. So we want to ask a question whether they exist in generic interacting system. The answer is yes. And actually, we have already discovered such kind of phase long time ago, like almost also 3 decades ago. So the first example, just this is a one dimensional system. And with spin one kind of antiferm magnetic chain. So the material discovered in experiment is always the, like U and B. This kind of additional term goes to zero, approach to zero. And the numerical calculation shows that if we turn on this U and B, the phase connected to the parameter at the origin, this U and B equals zero, distinguishable from a trivial disorder phase. So the trivial disorder phase, you can imagine you put this B equals zero and U go to infinite. So all the spin one kind of states just occupied on this SZ equals zero. So it's really trivial. It's just a product state. But on the other hand, for example, when we fix B to be zero, and we always find a transition when this U critical approach one. So that means there's something non-trivial in this model. And for a long time, people just called it topological phases in 1D. And there's also such kind of material can realize it. Okay, but until very recently, we actually realized such kind of so-called Haldane phase with parameter U and B equals zero need a certain symmetry protection. Namely, if we add arbitrary perturbation in this Hamiltonian, because this Hamiltonian still preserves certain symmetry. And if we break all the symmetry in this Hamiltonian, then the phase transition here to the trivial disorder phase just become a crossover. Later, it has been shown that such kind of so-called Haldane phase can be protected by many different symmetry. For example, it can be protected by time reversal or spin rotation symmetry. And that's why in typical study, people just show some model with broken certain symmetry, but not all the symmetry, so it looks like stable. But actually, if we break all the symmetry, it's just a trivial. We systematically try to understand what's the non-trivial property of such kind of so-called Haldane phase. So a technique we apply is called the wave function renormalization. But I'm not going to show you the detail here. So the result is that if you're starting from this spin one system with three states on each side, and if you do some wave function renormalization, basically it's a sequence of local unitary transformation, you will end up with some states like with four degree freedoms per sides. So you can visualize this kind of this fixed point state in this way. On each side, you have a kind of two subsides. So each two subsides carry spin one half. And this enables kind of subsides just form a very simple singlet. So it's kind of like a decoupled dimer. But the non-trivial thing is that if you have a boundary, on the boundary, there's a dangling spin one half degree freedoms. But it's kind of still interesting because we start from integer spin model. And we end up with some spin one half degree freedom on the boundary. So this kind of phenomena we call a symmetry fractionalization. And in this one dimensional case, actually it turns out the underlying mathematical structure also very simple because this is spin one half objects. Indeed, it's just a projective representation of the time reversal symmetry or spin rotation symmetry. So because mathematicians already know how to classify different types of projective representation, so we, in principle, can classify such kind of symmetry protected topological phases in one dimension. Because if you start from arbitrary one-dimensional model, it turns out the fixed point wave function always have such kind of form. So the non-trivial property only arises on a boundary. So before going to high dimension, let me just briefly mention what's the definition of this projective representation and how to classify it? Use some mathematical tool, namely this second group cohomology class. Maybe everyone familiar with representation theory. But projective representation actually just very simple. You just think about when we think about representation theory, we allow some U1 phase factor omega. And this you can imagine that for the previous example, this omega for the sublattice, we call it left sublattice and right sublattice, they just have this omega and omega inverse. So on a single side, they just cancel, they still form a linear representation. But if you think about sublattice, they can carry this so-called projective representation. But this phase factor omega, you cannot choose arbitrarily, because it must satisfy this associativity condition for this group algebra. For example, if you have G1, G2, G3, you can do the representation for G1, G2 together, then further do representation combined with G3, or you do the other way. So then it turns out there's associativity. This phase factor, you choose two different ways to make a representation of G1, G2, G3 must be the same. You can first make a representation for G2, G3, and then combine with G1. First make G1, G2, then combine with G3, basically. Just this condition. Okay, but on the other hand, it turns out not all the omega corresponding non-trivial projective representation. Some omega, they can be even be different. They still corresponding to the same projective representation. That is because this local kind of linear representation, the U here, you can choose arbitrary kind of U1 phase. You have a phase choice of this this U1. So that means any omega have a particular form. For example, this beta is just some arbitrary U1 phase factor. If it's generated by this kind of particular form, it automatically satisfies this so-called co-cycle condition. Okay, then it's obvious to see this kind of sets actually form a group, so we call it two co-cycle group. And this kind of omega generated by this particular kind of function beta, it's also form a group. Then the classification basically just the quotient group. We just take a quotient of this co-cycle group quotient by this co-boundary. Then we call the second group a cohomology class, which is again an abelian group that classify all these SPT phases in one dimension. Okay, so now the natural and the challenging question is that how to classify SPT phases in interacting spin or bosonic system in high dimension with the arbitrary internal symmetry group G. Because the free fermion and one dimensional interacting system looks like not so challenging. But in high dimension, this definitely would be much more harder. Okay, so let me again start from a very simple example. So the simple example we want to consider is actually a kind of non-trivial icing disorder phase. But let me start from a trivial kind of icing model and try to build up this non-trivial state based on some different point of view about this trivial phase. So we know this trivial transverse icing model in 2 plus 1D basically have two different phases. So one phase is T equal to 0. It's just kind of spontaneous symmetry breaking. The only can also kind of have two possibility like this ground state polarized or up or down. So it's a degenerate ground state. It's a symmetry breaking state. Also it has a trivial disorder phase like all the spin polarized along sigma x direction. But because in quantum mechanics you can express this sigma x basis as up plus down. So we have a different point of view about this trivial disorder phase. Namely, we can write down in terms of configuration of this so-called domain. So the domain just means if I have a spin flip, I starting from this perfect ferromagnetic state. I have a spin flip, then I create one domain. So I have two spin flip, I have two domain. So because this trivial kind of disorder phase just equal with the superposition of all this up, down, down, up, the kind of possible icing configuration. So in other words, it's equal with the superposition of all domain configurations, right? Okay, but this is still a trivial phase. Then we ask whether there exists a non-trivial icing disorder phase, namely the symmetry protected topological order phase. And the answer is yes. And actually, it turns out there are two and only two different icing disorder phase. So what's the non-trivial one? The non-trivial one turns out for each domain, it will have a minus sign coefficient in the wave function. So again, this is kind of, it's almost just equal with the superposition of all the domain configuration. So the correlation length is still zero and it's still a fixed point state. But it just modifies this sign that associated with each domain. For a single domain, you have minus sign. For two domain, you have plus sign. For odd number of domain, you have minus sign. And for even number of domain, you have plus sign. That's the rule. And it turns out such kind of non-trivial icing disorder phase can also be constructed and realized by so-called some exact solvable Hamiltonian. So the Hamiltonian is kind of some modification for this transverse term. Because we consider the T go to infinite limit. So the disorder phase, in the disorder phase, it only have one term, just the sigma x. But here, the non-trivial disorder phase just attached with some phase factor. So it's slightly complicated. The phase factor, the rule is following. It's kind of like a seven-body interaction. When you flip spin on P, Then you count in the spin configuration on QQ prime. If they are parallel, basically, you just put like a phase factor zero, there's nothing. And if they end parallel, it has a phase factor I. And you can prove that this operator BP on different sides, they still commute. So this model can be solved exactly. And it turns out the exact Brownian wave function just this wave function, and it has a constant gap. Okay, so now we try to think about what kind of rule can generate such kind of wave function, because we think about a locally interacting system, we want to think about some local rule. So the simple local rule just here. When we look at some kind of domain configuration locally, if we think about this green line just means some domain configuration. So the outside region, I assume the domain configuration completely the same. But just locally, they differ by this configuration. And if we put a minus sign here, then we I can show you one example. If the outside region just have this connected in this way, and if you're doing this local move, you find this number of loop change. So when you change the number from even to odd, you get a minus sign. So that's correctly generate this sign structure for this non-trivial eyes in this other phase. But we still have a question. Why this minus sign is special, right? One may ask, oh, what happened if I put an arbitrary sign here? Can I still generate some non-trivial phase or not? If arbitrary sign is allowed here, then to kind of suggest this phase actually is trivial, because you can just tune this theta to get a smaller, smaller, go to zero. And then it's just from pi to zero. If you find some adiabatic tuning of this theta, it turns out it's just the same as trivializing this other phase. But the interesting thing is that I will show you that the only possible solution as a fixed point wave function can only be plus minus one. So the reason is following. If we think about a so-called fixed point wave function described by this superposition of domain walls, I assume some kind of local configuration in this way, and I want to deform to some other local configuration in this way in the wave function. So I assume the rest part I do not plot here, they're completely the same. So if I consider deformation in this way, basically I do nothing, kind of just change this length or shape of this domain. But because it's a fixed point wave function, it's reasonable to argue that they should have the equal amplitude. There's nothing changed. So basically means if I go to this path, yeah, the value just one. But I can go to this path. Go to this path actually means I first doing some kind of domain deformation here, right? So if I doing some domain deformation here, I can end up with configuration like this. But this kind of configuration, which is equivalent to this, because here there's only one type of domain, so this step is trivial, but in general it could be non-trivial. And in the end, you consider another kind of deformation on here, and you deform to this final configuration. But additionally, you have another U1 phase, E2I seed. So you see that if you're doing this domain deformation along this path, there's a phase factor E2I seed square. But it must be matched with the previous path, if we assume it's a so-called fixed point state with correlation length zero. And it turns out the only allowed solution is just a plus minus one. So this kind of result suggests this minus one solution should describe some non-trivial disorder phase. But actually, there's a more powerful and direct measurement to show it's non-trivial. But because of the limitation of time, I don't tell you the detail. But the idea is that you can imagine some ideal experiment. You couple this system to a background Z2 gauge field. So kind of you're starting from this triangular lattice, but you can couple some C2 background gauge field on the link, which take a value plus or minus one. Then we can choose the following configuration, kind of along this path. So any path cut this link, I put a minus one, and the rest bound I just put this background flux plus one. Then I create a pair of so-called Z2 flux in this two triangle. And then you can do in some like adiabatic move to let this flux going around the other one. Then you can move back. And it turns out for such kind of move, you will pick up a non-trivial sign, minus one. And that means this Z2 gauge flux, in this non-trivial case, it's a semi, it's not a boson. In the trivial case, you can see the sign factor just a plus one, so it's a boson. And such kind of non-trivial property for this background Z2 flux can further imply there must be non-trivial edge modes. So I also don't give you the detail, but I just tell you some physical argument how this can be true. Let us assume with a disk kind of geometry, the ground state is unique. So I can imagine some physical process I call the W beta. Basically, it's kind of create a pair of this Z2 flux and adiabatic move to the boundary and annihilate. And another path, it's again a pair and go to the boundary and annihilate. But actually, I can do this in two different ways. So for example, I can do the gamma first and annihilate them on the boundary. I label this boundary to point as CD. And doing this the beta next. But I also can do the reverse way. And these two different ways, you can see topological, they are different from by a linking. So actually, there's a minus sign different. With this minus sign different, we can show this kind of assumption that the unique ground state with this kind of boundary cannot be true. Because such kind of minus sign suggests non-trivial algebra, the Z2 Heisenberg algebra, which does not admit any one-dimensional representation. That means this relation cannot be true. So on the boundary, it at least have twofold degeneracy. That is the either symmetry breaking or gapless phase. There's no trivial disorder phase can be realized on the boundary of such kind of non-trivial Ising disorder phase. Okay, so this is some physical idea and example. So next, let me just tell you the generic scheme for this classification. So in 1D, we know this second group of cohomology class can classify all the projective representations. So we know how to classify this SPT phases in bosonic system. But in 2D, according to a very powerful result actually discovered by high-energy people, Diagorfer and Witten, two decades ago, they show that this gauge flux, if we try to classify this gauge flux, we need to use this so-called third group of cohomology class. Then we just have a conjecture that, oh, whether we can generalize this further into high dimension. For example, in 3 plus 1D, we propose kind of use this fourth group of cohomology class to classify this braiding statistics of the flux line. Because in 3 plus 1D, the flux is not a point-like object. It's basically, it's a closed loop. Okay, but this conjecture has been verified in a recent paper. But our construction is slightly different because we kind of try to construct the exact ground state wave function for a trivial disorder phase. So in principle, even without this kind of background gauge field, we should still able to define this SPT phases. But in the previous example, I show you how to define this exact solvable ground state Hamiltonian and the ground state wave function. But now I show you a more kind of natural and generic way. This way we construct this topological nonlinear sigma model in discrete space-time. So the construction, from a mathematical point of view, is very natural and very nice. But later I will tell you how to relate it to the previous wave function description. But now let me just tell you what's the construction for this partition function. So the partition function, in arbitrary dimension, you can just think about, I'm thinking about some arbitrary triangulation for the D plus one space-time manifold. And for this triangulation, for example, in 2 plus 1D, this triangulation just a tetrahedral. Then I put some group elements on the vertices of the simplex. So in 2 plus 1D, I have four vertices. So I have four group elements. And in generic D plus 1D, I have D plus two vertices. And this new is kind of some U1 function, which is a map from G cross G cross G. Yeah, basically, there are D plus 2G map to U1. Then I just sum over all the G and also kind of add some normalization factor here. So the NV is the number of vertices. Then my purpose is just to make this kind of partition function to be topological invariant. In a sense, it's independent on the kind of triangulation. So it turns out to make this partition function topological invariant, we just impose the co-cycle condition for this U1 function nu. And here, there's a further detail I want to tell you is that because this function nu typically do not have this cyclic symmetry, so I need some local ordering of the group element. So the way is we impose something we call a branching structure. It can be viewed as some local orientation of the tetrahedral. Basically, the rule very very simple. Just on each kind of triangle, there's no oriented loop. Because once you have an oriented loop, you don't know how to order in this. And for example, here, on each triangle, there's no oriented loop. Then I have always have a lowest order, G0, with no incoming edge, and highest G3, with three incoming edge. So there's no co-ordering. I can uniquely put this function on the tetrahedral. Of course, this function should be symmetric. Namely, it's invariant on the G action. So that's the similar thing. We construct this nonlinear sigma model. And here we call it the topological nonlinear sigma model. This kind of co-cycle condition it's a generalization of the associativity rule for this omega phase factor for the projective representation. But actually, there's a simple way to remember this, because you can think about here, I have kind of G label up to D plus 2. You can think about I have D plus 2 group element from G, D plus 3. Yeah, I have G 0 to G D plus 2. So I just remove one element. Then the rest of G plus, GD, kind of D plus 2 group element, you can just put on the vertices of the D plus 1 simplices. And if you remove the odd element, you put a minus sign. If you remove the even element, you put a plus sign. And such kind of condition will imply this partition function is topological invariant. I will show you an example in the next slide, but here just tell you the definition. And of course, just similar to 1D, not each solution in this nu will correspond to a different phase. So some nu just correspond into the same phase, so we also need to define co-boundary. So again, this cohomology class is a quotient group. The co-cycle group quotient by this co-boundary group. And it classifies this SPT phases in D space-time dimension. Furthermore, for each kind of such kind of solution, we can construct the exact solvable Hamiltonian as well as its ground state wave function. So let me just show you one simple example in 1 plus 1D. So we can think about some triangulation just in this way. But then I put some kind of arrow on the link. So this arrow, in this case, you can just think about it induced by a certain time direction. So I have some particular direction, so I have this arrow. So there's no oriented loop. So it satisfies this branching structure. Then I have a unique way to put this new two function on this triangle. And this triangle, this two different color just means different two different types of orientation. So I can put this minus or plus there. And actually, this relation of this nu2 and omega just in the following way, because this omega is not invariant on the G action. And the requirement is the nu2 must be invariant on the G action. So that's why I put a kind of identity element here. So in this case, with this redundant variable, I can always make a nu2 invariant on the G action. This partition function in this case is just very simple. It's just a product of all this amplitude, U1 amplitude on the triangle. And the sum of group element and normalize it. Then we see clearly this co-cycle condition. So this actually is the associativity condition for the omega. Now it becomes the so-called co-cycle condition for this new two. Basically, it's the equivalent kind of condition. Have a very nice geometrical meaning. Just means, for example, for 1, 2, 3, I can associate with this triangle, and 0, 1, 3 associated with this one. And the other side, I have these two. So this equation just means these two different amplitude they're the same. Just means retriangulation invariants. So similar, I can also from this grouping get this one. But because here you see one triangle have opposite orientation, so when I put this move to the other side, I get a minus one. And also, this Guangxi wave function can be derived in a so-called holographic way. So just think about I have a partition function with a boundary, but I have a group element G0 in the center. So you can put anything. You can just, let's say, put an identity in the center. Then basically, the wave function just kind of a function of the group element on the boundary. Because if we think about this states represented by group elements, which form the faithful representation of a group representation, then that's the wave function. Once you fix this group element in the center, then you can just evaluate all the kind of two co-cycle, you get this wave function. And the connection to the previous kind of decoupled dimer, it's also simple. You can just think about you have a splitting, this each G splitting into a dimer. And then you apply some unitary transformation. Basically, this factor is a U1 phase factor. And after you apply that, they become completely decoupled dimer. But the symmetry action becomes non-trivial, just to become projective representation. Because in the previous notation, this symmetry action just in a normal way. The symmetry action on the wave function just multiplied by G. But you can do some basis redefinition to make the symmetry action non-trivial. And that's connected to the 1D example I proposed at the very beginning. And in two dimensions, you can do similar things. You can think about I have a S2 sphere. At one point in the center of the S2 sphere, then I make a triangulation for this S2 sphere and connect them with a point in the center. I have a bunch of tetrahedra. Then for any fixed group element on the boundary, you just evaluate this three co-cycle and multiply them together. In that way, you can actually get the non-trivial Ising disorder phase if we input this group as Z2 group. And input this non-trivial co-cycle for the Z2 group. Okay. And also, I want to mention the Hamiltonian is completely similar as the 1D and the 2D example I show in the beginning. You can just consider this commuting projector, so you can solve them exactly. Okay, so here I just show you some results for this classification. For example, in 2 plus 1D with this U1 time reversal symmetry, we find a non-trivial topological insulate even in bosonic system. And actually, we can find a 3 in 3 plus 1D. And there are some interesting properties for this bosonic topological insulate. For example, for the 2 plus 1D one, you can think about you can create some defect pi flux. It turns out this pi flux will carry Cramer doublets, although the original model and have time reversal symmetry T squared U to 1. But on, this pi flux defect, it become T squared minus 1. And also, there are some non-trivial kind of interesting property for this three-dimensional tolerance that proposed by other group. For example, they can have this non-trivial 2 pi axion response, and as well as some non-trivial property on the boundary. So I'm not going to tell you this detail. So for this SO3 symmetry, we have a Z classification. And in this case, we also have a good understanding because the boundary theory, because the boundary theory with the SO3 symmetry is a continuum symmetry. There's no spontaneous symmetry breaking with continuum symmetry in 1 plus 1D. So we know the boundary theory basically is SU to level 1, this Wessel-Witten term, SU to level K. Yeah, so we have K different possibilities. Okay, but then we want to ask whether this classification is complete or not. It turns out to be complete in 1D and 2D. And in 3D, there are some interesting cases actually beyond this classification. For example, if we consider time reversal symmetry in this case and this case, there's an additional Z2 indices. And also, if we think about some called a one-form symmetry, yeah, in condensed matter, sometimes we call it non-local because it's action on the loop space. If we think about the symmetry carried by string, then we can have more interesting SPT phases. So in a recent paper with Penn and also by David Gelta here. Yeah, so this kind of one-form symmetry may be very interesting in string theory. Okay. So now I want to address what looks like an even harder problem, namely how to classify this inheriting SPT phases in inheriting fermion systems. Because boson, it's kind of hard, but according to the previous mathematical noun results, we happen to have some very nice results. But for fermion, because no such kind of result, even in high energy physics. So we just try to, based on this kind of physical concept, and develop such kind of results. So the key idea is still similar. But in one dimensional, it's kind of relatively trivial, because you can map all the local fermion system to a local boson system. And the classification in principle can be solved. And in two dimension, you can still ask kind of gradient statistics of the G flux in a fermion system. But that definitely much tricky and harder than boson system. Because in a fermion system, we think about a Fock space. And the fermion, a trivial fermion in the Fock space already carries a minus one sign. So it will, in principle, mix with the gradient properties of this G flux. So we can have more kind of classifications. And it turns out that a formal treatment can be developed based on a generalization of this group cohomology theory from U1 module to the basically something like a Grassmann module. You think about this U1, it's like a very phase in a physical system. But when we think about a fermion system, we think about this very phase take a Grassmann number. So that's the idea. But let me just also start from a very simple example. Without any kind of fancy construction, but just an explicit example, how to construct a non-trivial fermionic SPT phase with a Z2 Ising symmetry. So we still want to think about this kind of superposition of domain picture. So in the boson case, I show you that the non-trivial phase can be achieved by a suited minus sign to the domain. But then it turns out for inheriting fermion system, a non-trivial SPT phase can be achieved just by in addition to put some non-trivial sign, you also attach some fermion to the domain. So the definition of the Hilbert space is not only just the spin degree freedom on the vortices now, on the triangular lattice. But I also have a Fock space on the on this triangle. So on each Fock space, in principle, you can have the states like zero fermion, one fermion. So here, these fermion, they just kind of spinless fermion. And then I can design some rule, let this fermion attach to the domain. And if we design this rule properly, you can show that indeed you can find a non-trivial fermionic SPT phases that cannot be realized in any purely bosonic system. For example, in the Z2 case, if you attach in such kind of rule, it turns out this alpha can be taken plus minus I. So let me describe this rule more precisely. This rule just like this model have some particular direction, for example, from up to down. And you locally look at this domain configuration. So it's either like in this way, kind of this two domain, assume it has an induced direction. It just goes through. There's no, this induced direction, there's, it's not like a two error match. Then you just don't put the fermion. But in this case, you just put the fermion. Then you think about this configuration, it exactly satisfies this rule. But this is a conjugated rule. Okay. Once we design such kind of non-trivial rule, we can also design this local move. But in this case, we need to specify two different type of local move, because if we design local move in this way, here we have two fermion, here no fermion, so we need to create two fermion and put some fixed factor alpha. But in this way, just a fermion hopping, and you also put some fermion phase alpha. The reason why we can put the two alpha always the same, because here I also have some U1 phase degree freedom. I can tune for this C1, for example. I can redefine C1 to E2 IC the C1. Then in certain convention, you can make these two alpha, they always the same. Then the task is similar as the bosonic case. We try to understand what's the allowed consistent solution for alpha as a fixed point state. We can exactly play the same game. We start from such kind of configuration, and we end up of such kind of configuration, and we apply to different types of move. So in this first type, it's still kind of trivial. So in each step, I just hop a fermion. just make this fermion, I annihilate this like C1 fermion, create C4. And in here, I just annihilate C2, create C1. Because here, basically, topologically, nothing changed. Just make this string shorter in the intermediate step. But here, we again apply two basic moves. But these two basic moves basically kind of hop this C2 to C3 with some coefficient alpha. So I put some alpha when hop. But I have, similar to the one Bosanic case, I have two kind of basic moves. So in the end, I have alpha squared. Okay, so now I want to compare this coefficient on these two sides. And because the original configuration, there's one fermion. So this C1, when you remove this C1 ligand to this side, it acts on this one fermion number, so just one. So you can remove this. And here it's similar. There is no C3 fermion. So act on a vacuum, you can remove this C3 dagger. So you end up just with such kind of equation. And it turns out that in the solution, alpha must be plus minus I, because there's an additional minus sign when you exchange this fermion operator. And that's the magic why we can get an additional solution in interacting fermion system if you attach some fermion or decorate this fermion on a domain. And further, we can do more sophisticated calculation for the breeding statistics for the C2 flux if we couple to some background the C2 gauge field. And it turns out the exchange phase factor is like kind of half semion, because for semion, it's plus minus I, it's pi over 2, but now it's pi over 4. Okay, so now I want to also develop some systematic kind of way to classify this interacting fermion system. But we have the previous model as a very nice hint, because just as I said, once I have a wave function, I can imagine this wave function lives on the boundary of a certain partition function. For example, if I have a sphere, I can imagine this wave function is generated by some partition function with a sphere boundary, and there's one point G0 in the center. When I evaluate all the kind of amplitude on this tetrahedral, I should produce this wave function. But in this construction, this fermion lives on the triangle. That means it's kind of lives on the face of the tetrahedral. Then it's very natural to motivate us to develop this so-called super cocycle, in the sense that this kind of tetrahedral not only have four group elements on it, but also attached with some Grassmann variable, this is theta. But whether the attached rule, whether I should put a theta on the face or not, completely determined by the group element. Just like in the previous rule, once I have a kind of any kind of fixed domain configuration, I know I should attach fermion or not. So it's this n is a function of g1, g2, g3 on these 3 points. It just takes value 0 or 1. So 0 just means you don't attach, 1 just means you attach. And this nu 3 plus, nu 3 minus, just a 2 u1 coefficient. It's just a complex coefficient. Okay. And with such kind of setup, we can naturally define some so-called Grassmann amplitude. And of course, for simplicity, we consider the global symmetry, this total symmetry G. Sorry, it should be GF here. Just the tensor product of this bosonic symmetry and the additional fermion parity conservation. Because in any fermion system, we know physically we require this fermion parity cannot be changed by local interaction. We only allow to put an even number of fermion terms. Then this n take 0 or 1 value must be even if we sum over the, all the fermion number on the on a single tetrahedral. That's also a locality property, because if this tetrahedral contains all the number of fermion, it's kind of non-local. It's a non-local amplitude, and which should be not allowed in any kind of local quantum field theory. So this is actually just some kind of idea how to discretize a fermion path integral on this triangulation. Okay, then with such kind of setup, we just try to define a partition function and show it is topological invariant under certain rule. So the partition function, you can imagine, it's very similar to this bosonic one. Just replace this cocycle coefficient with called a super cocycle coefficient. But actually, there's a little bit of detail, and this detail may be very interesting and related to this so-called spin structure of a manifold in discrete space-time. It turns out we must put some minus sign here. And this sign is determined by another integer function m. So this m is just kind of completely determined by this n. Once I have an n configuration, I can define n as the summation of m, because n is kind of the summation of n is even. So I always allow to express it in this way. Then with such kind of partition function, I can design an analog of the co-cycle rule. And it turns out this rule slightly complicated. Just the multiplication of all these kind of coefficients, no longer one. It's equal to some like phase factor, minus FD plus two. And I will tell you that the precise definition and the meaning of this function later. So here I just slightly explain that in the previous slides, I showed the fundamental data is the new plus minus. And the new here actually, together with M, will completely determine the definition of new plus minus. So for example, in 2 plus 1D, this definition of new plus, just this minus M factor and a multiple new 3, and new minus is similar. And in 2 plus 1D, this FD, F2 also have a, F4 have a precise definition. Basically, it's formed like a couple product. So it turns out if we want to solve this kind of co-cycle condition and quotient it by some equivalent solution, first the thing we want to do is that this n, this decoration, must be taken in this kind of cohomology class with the Z2 coefficient. That just means I can arbitrarily create a fermion locally, but with respect to symmetry. But if I take some configuration in this class, it's invariant and it cannot be changed by any kind of local symmetric fermion creation process. Okay, so because to completely solve this kind of equation, it's complicated, and I'm not going into more details further. I just tell you the final result. And the final result is very simple and very nice. It can be presented in this so-called short exact sequence. Actually, just a fancy name, because you can also just define this way. This so-called super group cohomology basically just can be defined like on the right-hand side, it's like it's a quotient group. And on the left-hand side, it's a normal subgroup. The normal subgroup, it's basically just this quasonic group cohomology class. And this arrow, I think, yeah, I don't know why mathematicians like arrows, and but it have a nice meaning. Just means the imaging of A in B turns out to be the kernel of B in C. So that's the meaning of arrow. So they take this definition alternatively to represent this relation. Okay, so briefly, you can see that it's kind of this supergroup cohomology class always contains this bosonic part as a center. And it's kind of like a central extension over this so-called graded structure. And there are some detail I put here. It's not really H upper 2, H upper 3 with Z2 coefficient. It's some like B. So B just means some subgroup. The precise definition of this B is following. The value in this group, it's a subgroup of this cohomology class with Z2 coefficient. And we only collect the elements when this map minus FD plus 2 become a co-boundary if we replace it with U1 coefficient. And actually, this FD plus 2 map mathematically turns out to be very novel. It's a so-called Steenrod square. It naturally induces a map from H of D to H of D plus 2 with Z2 coefficient. But the obstruction-free condition just make it to be a co-boundary in U1. Because if it's not about obstruction-free, then the previous equation, the twisted co-cycle equation, just don't have a solution. So that's why we need the graded structure to be a valid graded structure here. But there's one more detail in 3D. Here we call it something rigid. Rigid just means some bosonic SPT phase can become trivial in 3D. For example, the bosonic SPT phase protected by time reversal turns out to be connected to a trivial disorder phase in a fermion system. And that's why here, typically, you need to take a quotient. So this rigid just defined by this quotient. And this quotient just group just generated by minus F4. So then we complete this description about this table. It's a little bit complicated, and for some reason, turns out cannot be avoided in this complication for the classification of Fermion. But in the end, let me just show you some simple example about the results. For example, in 2 plus 1D with Ising symmetry, we can get a Z4 classification. So kind of in addition to this non-trivial bosonic SPT phase, there's 2 more non-trivial Fermionic SPT phase. And the most interesting part is that if we consider this anti-unitary Z2 symmetry, time reversal symmetry with T squared equal to 1 in 3 plus 1D, we also found a non-trivial classification. This is kind of somewhat surprising because in free Fermion system, if we do the classification, it's completely trivial. It cannot be derived from any K-theory framework. And also, if you compute this interacting fermion, just interacting boson, just as I said, this non-trivial interacting boson SPT phase just become trivial if you embed it into a Fermion system. So this is something kind of beyond these non-results. Also, like by others, like Kapustin and Danfried, they have some different methods. But Kapustin method shows there's also nothing there. But Danfried's results give rise to a Z2 classification. So we conjecture these two Z2 might be the same thing. Okay. So, now I towards this end, I want to briefly discuss whether this scheme is complete or not. It turns out to be complete in 1D, but still not complete in 2D or 3D. The reason is very simple, because this kind of construction completely motivated by a simple example. Physically, we just decorated some fermion on the kind of domain. But there's no kind of obvious reason such kind of decoration rule is complete. And actually, we can decorate some more interesting thing called a Majorana fermion on the domain. And if you decorate in that way, you can develop some general group of supercohomology class in 2 plus 1D, which in principle completely classify all the SPT phases. If the GF is take a product form, GB tensor product of Z2F. And there's another extension here. Yeah. But this extension actually very simple, just counting the Z2 subgroup in GB. And if you take such kind of extension, for example, if you take GB to be Z2, and it turns out the complete classification for this Z2 SPT phases in 2 plus 1D Fermion system is Z8. So in total, there are 8 different phases. And this additional Z2 indices, very surprisingly, will generate non-abelian statistics, even we start from an abelian group. But we are still working such kind of structure to complete the classification in 3 plus 1D. So there are some ongoing work, so I'm not telling you now. Finally, before I finish the talk, I want to briefly mention that potential implication for high energy physics. And the claim is kind of interesting and surprising. Kind of each SPT phases can uniquely define a gauge anomaly or gravitational gauge mixture anomaly on its boundary. Because anomaly is something high energy people really interested in, right? So, and they also play very important role in high energy physics. So how to see this kind of relation to the anomaly? So the recipe is in the following. You're starting from some SPT phases, and then you design some kind of symmetry twist on the boundary. So the symmetry twist just means you kind of locally change your boundary condition. And typically, you can represent it by some kind of gauge field. It's kind of like coupled to some background gauge field. And you can pick up an arbitrary gauge field configuration, and then you integral out this dynamic degree freedom in a bulk. And you see what's the potential function as a function of this twist. So I just tell you one simple example. For the U1 case, this kind of twist in arbitrary dimension, in principle, can have such kind of transcendence form. So it's like, in 2 plus 1D is the first chain number. And 4 plus 1D is the second chain number. And this transcendence form have a close relationship to the ABJ anomaly on one dimension lower, and the people are probably very familiar. Because when you apply local gauge transformation, it induces some, for example, in 3 plus 1D, induce some F wedge F term on the 3 plus 1D boundary, if you think about the 4 plus 1D transcendence term. And also, this may be less familiar. Actually, in 4 plus 1D, you can also describe such kind of mixture anomaly. So F is the U1 field strength, and CS3 is the kind of transaminance action of on three manifold for this gamma is the connection field. Something more interesting that even we find that for kind of discrete group, for example, for arbitrary kind of discrete finite abelian group, we can still define anomaly. But in some sense, this anomaly is not perturbative because the perturbation is just a Higgs space. There's nothing. And basically, the kind of ZN gauge theory, we can describe them by some gauge field, U1 gauge field with flat connection. So for example, in arbitrary dimension, we can write down such kind of term. And such kind of term, it has the same property, like if you apply gauge transformation, it induces some boundary term. And this boundary term corresponding to the anomaly on the SPT boundary. So that's the idea that how to relate SPT phases and quantum anomaly. So let me just conclude. So a very quick conclusion. We propose this group cohomology theory and a certain notion of a supergroup cohomology theory to classify inheriting boson and fermion SPT phases. And most interestingly, I hope this SPT kind of story can also have application in high energy in future. And particularly, if we assume our universe is kind of like some superconductor, if the neutrino is Majorana fermion. Then if we impose CPT symmetry at a fundamental scale, there's naturally three types of projective representation. And I hope these three types of projective representation might relate to this three generation of neutrino and their mass mixing. And also, more interesting kind of theoretically, these SPT phases maybe also exist in the presence of supersymmetry. And that might be related to this anomaly with supersymmetry, so it could be interesting. And also, there's new types of fermionic TQFT and potential application in quantum gravity. And also, this realization, of course, in condensed matter would be very important and also important for future industry. Finally, I want to mention that if we create a two interface for these SPT phases, there's a natural way to generate conformal field theory. So this is ongoing work with my students. We find many examples if we take this interface to be 1 plus 1D. But it would be very interesting if we can go to higher dimension and might produce new conformal field theory from exact lattice model. Okay. Okay, thanks for your attention.
So, questions? Oh, okay, let me start off. So, for this three-dimensional thing with the Z2, do you have some proposal for a theory that has that property, or is it just the classification suggests it ought to exist?
Actually, it might have a very interesting property on its boundary, but it's still a conjecture that typically you can think about it, you can realize some non-trivial topological phase that carry certain symmetry realization cannot be realized in a purely 2 plus 1D system. So the proposal is that for this case, the conjecture that for the boundary, if you realize toric code, then this toric code have E and M particle. And this E and M particle might carry this T quartic equal to minus 1 time reversal symmetry. So it's kind of very fractionalized symmetry. Because it exists exact wave function. So it's a lattice model construction, so it exists exact three-dimensional wave function.
The three-dimensional.
Yeah. So in principle, there's a way to detect it. But because it's anti-unitary symmetry, we cannot simply turn on some background gauge field because we don't know how to define gauge field for anti-unitary symmetry. Otherwise, if it's unitary symmetry, it would be very straightforward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, could you repeat
the question? Yeah. So you mentioned that the classification in 2D, in the next bullet point, is complete.
Yeah.
What does it mean?
means that with this additional kind of short exact sequence, we can derive this result from some different mathematical framework, so-called G-extended category theory. And the G-extended category theory is supposed to be a complete framework and consistent with this result. So in my construction, it's like more like a construction. I just construct some like a fixed point partition function. Mm-hmm. But in this G-extended category theory, there's more generic setup. You start from some, you can describe this Fermion system as with a category theory with identity particle and just a Fermion. And then you make a G extension. And you design this so-called G extended category theory. And there you can derive the same result. But that's proposed by mathematicians, so I just follow their result. Yeah,
so from that point of view, in 2D, a topology, a fermionic phase of matrix, just a phase of matter, has a fermion particle, a fermion quasi-particle.
Yes, yes, yes.
Actually, I had a similar question. Mm-hmm. When you say that the classification is complete, you're talking about sort of disconnected regions in the space of all Hamiltonians. That's how you define different phases, if I understand. There's no adiabatic transition from different wave functions. What?
So.
Didn't you define different phases as ones in which right, providing the Hamiltonian is restricted by something. So my question is, one thing is the symmetry, but there must be other restrictions, locality. I mean, what's the ground rules? Are you presupposing a lattice theory? Is it a continuum theory? Do you see what I'm asking? What's the range of allowed Hamiltonians?
Yeah, so here the principle is slightly different. So because we cannot investigate the whole space of Hamiltonian, that's infinite number of Hamiltonian. So here we try to find a presentative. Basically, we try to find some fixed point Hamiltonian and a fixed point wave function. Then we define certain non-trivial property. And by using this non-trivial property, we argue they cannot be connected through some adiabatic path with respect to symmetry. So that's the argument. But it's still not a mathematical proof.
So is it presupposing a lattice, this fixed point condition?
It can
seem to be related to a lattice.
Both lattice or continuum can be both. Yeah.
But does presuppose locality?
Yeah, we needed to consider local Hamiltonian system. Yeah, we impose that. Yeah. Because that's a typical assumption in kinetic matter. Everything is local system.
Yeah, so is there a continuum version of this then? This uniqueness.
Our like field theory approach have some suggestion, because if we write down this kind of field theory description, then it suggests that even in the continuum they are possible to define, because this field theory is in continuum space time.
And when we have the lattice, it could be any lattice whatsoever, or is there a different set of phases for different lattices? For
in the topological fixed point, you can put on any lattice, any triangulation. So it's construction like a Torrey of Villeroy. So you make triangulation for the space-time, and you can put this partition function on any triangulation.
Okay. In quantum electrodynamics, you would realize most or all of these states.
You mean in quantum electric dynamics in which dimension?
In three dimension.
In three dimension, in typically the electric magnetic dynamics, it's gapless. So I don't know how to define. If you can make it a gap, then
what I'm getting at is fundamentally all matter is just respecting quantum electrodynamics, nothing else.
Yeah, but here our definition is for gapped phase. If you want to consider Higgs phase, my answer is yes. For gapless phase, I don't know how to define these SPD phases.
again, the fundamental interaction is just QED, right, between protons and electrons, or nuclei and electrons. That's it. So can they realize all of these topological states?
At a low energy.
Yes.
I think again, at low energy, if I assume it's a Higgs phase, the answer is yes. If it's not a Higgs phase, it's gapless, then I don't know, because I don't know how to define these gapless SPD phases.
Are there more questions?
So did I understand that you were proposing that different generations of neutrinos would transform differently under the discrete Lorentz transformations?
Yeah. I have a proposal in my paper that at a cutoff scale, if you design some cutoff scale model, then this different flavor of neutrino will carry different types of.
Which model? Cutoff, did you say? I didn't hear what you said.
Some cutoff model, for example, there's underlying lattice regulation or some TKFT. But in the continuum field theory, this kind of projective representation is not well defined. You must go to some cutoff model.
So, discrete model in which there are different kinds of representations.
Yes, you can imagine in a simple way. It's, you can think about some dual superconductor model. Some kind of, if you imagine the fundamental particle is kind of a defect of a superconductor, like some hedgehog. And then on this hedgehog, you can make this projective representation.
Well, would this be observable? Would this have experimental consequences?
The consequence is that it will determine some unique pattern of mixing angle as well as mass ratio. So that's a prediction in my paper. So that's a consequence at low energy. Yeah.
One last, this is related to what you just said, I think. Does this whole framework have anything to teach us about fermion doubling?
It's related, but I cannot talk in it now. Maybe we can discuss later. Yeah, it's related, yeah. Potentially, there's a proposal that might able to solve the fermion doubling problem in the presence of strong interactions. Yeah.
I see. Thanks.
Any more questions? Then let's thank Xing again.